Live from clickorlando.com, this is News 6 at... This is a News 6 Plus takeover. Here now is Matt Austin and Ginger Gadsden with Florida's 4th Estate. Sponsored by Light Orlando, delivering hope together.
Matt, what if I were to tell you that 60 years ago, two things happened almost simultaneously that changed Florida, Central Florida, but mostly Florida as we know it. We're going to talk today about how UCF is a product of the baby boom and how the people in St. Louis were almost the ones to say, welcome to the happiest place on earth. Shut your mouth.
A good friend of ours, Dr. Jim Clark, wrote a fascinating op-ed in the Orlando Sentinel about, man, the things that sort of the forks in the road of history that could have changed everything for Central Florida. Central Florida used to be a little sleepy. It was a sort of a citrus farm slash they were getting into the space program. And, you know, things were starting to hop around here, but definitely it all changed in the 60s when we got this huge theme park industry that turned into a monster, as well as a little bitty technical university that turned into one of the largest in America. Dr. Jim Clark is a history professor at UCF. He knows a little bit about everything and a lot about nothing. Thank you so much for joining us, Jim.
Wow. My pleasure. I'm sorry. I'm sorry he introduced you that way.
He liked it.
A lot about everything. Yeah. So let's start with Disney. It almost didn't happen here, which is mind-blowing when you think about it, because if you take Disney out of Central Florida and Florida, wow, there's a big old hole. Tell us a little bit about what happened there.
Yeah, they when Disneyland opened, they started doing surveys, and they found that just 2% of the people coming to Disneyland in Anaheim were from east of the Mississippi. And so they began thinking, hey, we need at least one more park. Originally, they were thinking of a chain of parks, something like Six Flags or, multi-locations around the country. And then they said, no, we don't want to do that. We'll pick one spot. And they began looking, and they looked at Niagara Falls, which back then was the must-see tourist spot in the country. And they rejected Niagara Falls and a second site outside of New York because it couldn't be open year round. And Walt's concern was the staffing. He wanted employees who were working year round rather than seasonal workers who would just show up for a few months. He said he thought that would give it too much of a carnival atmosphere. And so they looked outside Washington, D.C., and they seemed to settle on St. Louis for a different kind of attraction, kind of incorporating the city and the Mississippi. And Walt got into a disagreement with Augie Bush, the family that owned Anheuser-Busch, makers of Busch Beer and Budweiser. And basically, Augie Bush said to Walt, hey, you're not coming to St. Louis if you're not serving beer. Oh. And he wanted the beer concession. And Walt said, no, we're not going to serve any beer or liquor in the Magic Kingdom. And it kind of went downhill from there. And literally, they had the dinner the night before. Augie Bush made a comment. And they were supposed to sign the papers the next morning, and Walt called it off. So it was that close.
Wow, a big thank you to Augie Bush for screwing up that deal. Jim, why was he so adamant about not selling alcohol at the Magic Kingdom?
Well, that was his thing. I mean, he had the beer concession for the football teams, for the baseball teams, and here was this major thing coming to St. Louis, telling him, no, we don't want your product in our theme park. And so I think he was greatly insulted.
Yeah, well, why did Walt not agree with having the beer? Why didn't he just say, okay, we'll do it?
No, that's been one of the standards of Disney, that both Disneyland and Disney World were founded on the idea of no liquor, no drinking. Walt, again, it's like the seasonal opening. Walt was worried that it was going to end up kind of like a carnival or a county fair or something like that. And he did not want drinking in his park.
I can't even imagine that they would have considered Niagara Falls. People complain on a chilly day at Disney, so I don't know how they were going to have Niagara Falls, a location there. So talk a little bit about how once he decided that it was going to be Central Florida, where all the orange groves were, not even orange groves, but just basically nothing. He really tried to keep it a big secret, and a lot of people thought it was going to be St. Louis, and he did all he could to almost not be deceptive, but keep it on the down low.
Oh, yeah. They were scared to death that word would leak out because land prices would soar. And so they made every effort they could to keep this top secret. They finally settled on Florida, and they looked at a number of locations. They looked at Palm Beach County, and MacArthur, the billionaire, offered him 3,000 acres. And Walt said, no, that's not enough. So then they narrowed it down to four sites. One was near Bradenton, the other near Daytona. And Walt said he did not want to compete with a free attraction, meaning the beach. Yeah. Hey, do we want to spend $100 and go to Disney, or do we want to lay on the beach for free? And so those were knocked out. And finally, they came down to Ocala and Orlando. And he drove up to Ocala, looked at land there. Remember, the Disney family comes from North Lake County. And so Walt knew Florida. He had come here as a child, played with his cousins. Very few people realize this. Walt's parents were married in Lake County.
Kismet or something, right?
Yeah. It's in the middle of the Ocala National Forest today. So I'm not sure anything remains of it. But yeah, so they were married there. And so he would come and visit his cousins. And a favorite aunt would take him over to Ocala, which was the big city if you were living in Lake County. And so he knew the area well. And he drove up there and they looked at the land. They scoped it out. And then the next day, he flew over Orlando, and where I-4 meets the turnpike, he said, that's it, and picked Orlando.
It was literally 12 hours from being in St. Louis, but we made the decision. He flew over the land. What were the next steps, Jim, and how long before he flew over until we saw groundbreaking?
Well, it took a while. Walt did not know that the land he was pointing to was underwater. And you have heard all the stories about underground Disney, about all the tunnels and everything running underneath the Magic Kingdom. The fact is that those are not underground. Those are at ground level. It's the attraction that's up in the air. He had to put in 16 feet of fill dirt to compensate for all the swamps. Those lakes right next to the entrance at Disney World were dug out to get fill dirt to build the Magic Kingdom. So it took an extra year to build because he was pointing to a swamp.
Disney wasn't the first theme park. It wasn't like Walt just came and said, wow, what if we put a theme park here? It might do well, because there were already Cypress Gardens. The water skiers were out there on the lakes. There were a bunch of sort of gator landish, small scale gator operations out there when Disney came. So it wasn't like, hey, it's not like tourists don't come here to try to enjoy the area, right?
No, in fact, Disney opens in 1971, and even into the late 60s, the two most popular attractions in the United States. You want to guess, Matt?
two most popular attractions? Well, I'm going to say Niagara Falls and the Grand Canyon. Or you just mean like...
You're halfway there.
Okay.
The Grand Canyon and Cypress Gardens.
Wow.
The two most popular. Yeah. And also in Orlando, and Matt, I don't know if you remember covering this story a number of years ago, when a tree called the Senator burned down in Longwood. Remember that weird story?
Yeah, I remember a girl was like smoking meth in there or something and burned it down, right?
Exactly. That was one of the biggest attractions in Central Florida. It drew thousands, tens of thousands of people. People would come to Florida to see this big tree. And
it was older was than Jesus.
We're not shaming people for wanting to see it, Ginger. It's just, I mean, that's a long way to drive to see one redwood, right?
Whatever. We talked a lot about Disney. We also want to talk about, on the other side of this break, the fact that UCF is a result of the baby boom that happened in the 50s and 60s. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Hey, welcome back to Florida's Fourth Estate. We've been talking to our dear friend, Dr. Jim Clark. He is so well-versed in the history of the state of Florida, and he's going to tell us a little bit about the university where he is a hot commodity as a professor. Everybody wants to take his class. Everybody wants him to tell them about that sweet, sweet history. It used to be Florida Technical University.
Yeah, Matt, I got some papers here for you to grade.
Everybody's getting an A, kids. Yeah. Congratulations.
Yeah. Professor Austin.
So, Jim, when UCF first came on the forefront here, just started out, tiny school out in the 60s, as we explained in the last segment there, that it happened around the time Walt Disney was touring. And so when he found the land to get Disney, this is when UCF started. This was back in 1963. It was founded. It started off tiny. Now it's one of the biggest colleges in America. Jim, tell us a little bit about the setting for why they needed a college here in Orlando.
Yeah, people forget at the beginning of World War II, Florida was the least populated state in the South. So there were only three colleges: Florida Women's College in Tallahassee, UF, and Florida A&M for African Americans, that were sponsored by the state. After the war, the post-war baby boom comes along. And so kids born in, say, 1946, 1947 are going to be graduating from high school in, 63, 64, 65. And the state demographers look at this tidal wave of students coming in and realize there aren't enough seats in schools. And so beginning in the 50s, they start the University of South Florida. And then finally in 63, they the legislature authorized a school for Eastern Florida. And the state created the university, but did not give it any money to buy land.
How do you not do one without the other? You could prove it, but it's like, okay, good luck with finding
that
it.
That means you don't really care if it happens, is what that means.
So, Ginger, you're new here to Florida and don't know about the Florida legislature?
I'm sorry. It just didn't make sense. But thank God we have really good citizens here.
Here's what I have trouble grasping. They got 89 people, which is a lot of people, to each put up $5,000. And today's money, that would be like 60 grand. And think about, hey, Matt, I need 60 grand from you, but honest, the legislature will pay you back. Would you?
0% chance I'm doing that deal. Are you kidding me? So they said, we'll pay you back if you give us the $5,000?
Well, they said the legislature will vote the money at some future date.
Really?
What a crazy... And 89 people took this sucker bet?
Yeah. And they bought the land. A guy offered them, he owned 1,000 acres. He was going to charge them $500,000, $1,000 an acre, but he would then give them another $500 to pick that site. They had looked at other sites in Tuscaloosa and down where Florida Mall is today, around there on the trail. And so they bought land from this gentleman who was from outside of Philadelphia. And apparently the land was owned by disreputable people linked to organized crime. And the gentleman got the $500 and went back to Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and did not share with his friends, who shot him in the lobby of his motel.
Wow, so, the seedy underbelly of how UCF came to pass. Wow.
Wow.
So it's an amazing thing that we got it. And, you know, the leadership in Orlando, we think of it as basically a sleepy town in 1962, 63, 64. And yet they got Disney, they got UCF, they got the airport from the Air Force. All of these things happening, which made Orlando what it is today.
Wow. Maybe the most important decade ever, Ginger, for us.
Perhaps. No, I just thought, and they originally thought UCF was going to be to funnel students to help with the space program, which is why they were originally the Citronauts as well.
Yeah. Our mascot was a combination orange and astronaut, and I wanted to bring back the second mascot, Vinny the Vulture. For a year, we were known as the UCF Vultures.
What?
Yeah.
What a terrible idea.
And then, of course, we became the Knights. So
somebody with some sense finally came in with some branding chops. And UCF has become, from this Florida Technical University in 1963, the University of Central Florida. They have a great mascot now, the Knights, and they have nearly 70,000 students, 68,000 at last check for the 2022 semester in the fall. Jim, how did it grow so incredibly quickly over that time?
You know, it's the credit goes to Dr. Hitt. First of all, Trevor Colburn became president. He did a great job. He was one of the people who started the football program back when people like me were saying, what are you thinking? What? How are we going to have a football team here? Our first coach was the City of Orlando recreation director, who after work downtown would come out here and you know, get a football team ready to play schools like St. Leo over in Tampa. And so then John Hitt comes in, and he begins this unbelievable expansion fueled by Bright Futures. And Matt, you are very conversant with the Bright Futures program.
Oh, yeah, I'm a Bright Futures kid, my friend.
It is saving you huge amounts of money. And so the university began expanding. You look at things that people said we'd never get, the medical school, for example, and which really kind of became the foundation for Lake Nona, and all these other things. It's just been an amazing period of time. And as you point out, we are the second largest public university in the country, second to Arizona State. A sidelight. The man who gave us a horse, the Pegasus, for our football mascot, and the man who helped raise $300,000 to save the UCF program. At one point in the early 80s, it was bankrupt, and the football team was about to go extinct. And Burt Reynolds showed up and raised amounts of money for the football team and saved UCF football.
Hey, so you could say a seminal saved the Knights? Because he is a Florida State Seminole, Burt Reynolds.
He is a Florida State Seminole.
Yeah, we got some big timers there at Florida State. But you know who wishes that mafia deal never happened, in which the guy got shot in the head and so UCF never became a thing? Oklahoma State University, because they got pounded by those Knights this year. I bet they wish all this history never happened. Dr. Jim Clark, always wonderful to have you on the show, my friend. Thank you for educating us, as always.
Thank you.
Jim, a pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you for watching Florida's Fourth Estate. You can download it from wherever you listen to podcasts or watch anytime on News 6+.